Canelo Jacobs in the books. It's time to break that ish down. It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports. And the voice you hear is that of your boy, the Brian Campbell, a survivor of 6 days in Sin City, backed, jacked, ready to go. Still on the West Coast, coming to you from Rafe Boogs' backyard of L.A. this week, ready to break down all things Canelo Jacobs and spin it forward to not only what's next for both fighters, but a decent weekend at the fights coming up. And we got to hear how our boy, your boy and mine, Rafe, did returning from Asia. He's back. He's ready. He's here. He's my co-host. He loves box. His name is Rafe Boogs.
Let me lick you up. Let me lick you down. Danny Jacobs, he ain't got no spit.
Oh, baby, it's Rafe Bartholomew, the New York Times award-winning, highest-rated author. What do they call that these days?
That actually is the title, but it's the New York Times award-winning highest-rated author in the universe, period.
Danny has a stick.
No, Dwyer, he didn't bring the stick with him.
It was not Danny's night.
No. Boogs, welcome to the show. This show, of course, sponsored, backed, and jacked by that performance-enhancing audio. I'm washed right now. I'm 40. I'm day 8 on the West Coast, but I'm going to grind because this week, Rafe, I don't know if you know that, but they have announced that Jermell Charlo will, in fact, rematch Tony Harrison for that junior middleweight title coming up in Vegas. Press conference this week in L.A., and do a little PBC face-to-face. Rafe, I don't know if you've seen my show. My show, Rafe. All right? My show.
I know all of the PBC boxing insiders, especially the best of the best, Brian Campbell.
I don't know if you've seen it, but it can be a great product, and sometimes it can be an average product based on the personalities at hand. I'm expecting big things from Charlo and Harrison. They can talk, Rafe. They can talk, brother.
That's right. Look, Brian, well, it hasn't aired yet, but when you recorded with Ivan Redcock, you were telling me that he was a hell of a character. I think as long as you are, I'd say every other episode, if you can drag something that enters the soundboard world, yes, enters the boxing lore, kind of like a Bernard Hopkins, you know, being, I was up in your ass for however many rounds, you know, like that is what face off is for.
And you ain't.
Yes. Stop bringing me Canelo. Yes. Yes. Rafe, before we get into the box world, before we tell people 5-star review, all right, stop being cheap. All right. You've been eating long enough now. Stop being greedy. Right. Right.
Pay respect. Yeah.
That's a DMX line.
I'm trying to, like, it's in my head. Like,
yeah, I love the first.
Keep it real, partner. Give to the needy.
I would want to say the first two, but really the first and a half DMX albums were fantastic.
Yo, especially the first one. I mean, first God, one. The, yes. There was some, that, it was something that no one else.
That's
had
the red
really
album
heard.
Cover,
it was a new
right?
Style.
The red album cover with the blood, dark and hot as hell.
Hell is hot and something water. It's been a long time, but in high school, his songs would basically start riots. I mean, it wasn't from that album, but Rough Riders Anthem could really, really shut down. I mean, call the cops type stuff.
When I hear Prime DMX, do you know what I think of? Do you remember Private Stock, that malt liquor made by Heffenweffer? And
yes.
they were known for those, glass 12-ounce bottles that on the inside of the cap, there was like a puzzle, like a classic concentration puzzle. You know where I'm going with that, right? I don't know if you know this though, Rafe. They made 40s. We drank them regularly. But right around the time DMX was first hot, and I would go to these sketchy ghetto parties in Waterbury, Connecticut.
Come on, man. Let's keep it dignified, all right? We shouldn't, this is 2019.
Well,
boxing podcasters shouldn't be using ghetto as an adjective
Well, I'm going to say, were the parties sketchy? Yes. Did they take place in the ghetto? Yes. So that it was a sketchy ghetto party. So here's the deal. At those liquor stores, they had the 72-ounce jug of Heffenreffer. So, like, these are one of these things that, like, I can't ever find on the internet to prove that it's true, but it actually happened. It was a jug that had a hook for a handle. So I would bring that jam to these parties, these ghetto parties, Rafe, and like when you're walking around a party with DMX playing and you have a 72-ounce jug of malt liquor in your hands, girls stop what they're doing. They come over to you. They want to take a swig. They want to find out who you are. Rafe, it was a chick magnet.
That is, I would not expect the 72-ounce jug of malt liquor to be a chick magnet, because I've been at my share of plenty, just respectable parties, parties that normal people have, block parties, regular good old fashioned good times parties, where lots of, where I was holding a Colt 45 or a St. Ides. I remember in high school, we thought we were cool. We're like, yeah, give me that Stiddies.
Wait, you got beat by a man with Stiddies? Where are you going with this, Rafe?
No. Oh Lord, not that Stiddies. Never give me that Stiddies, man. I just meant the St. Ides. The St. Ides special brew.
Oh, that's what you called it in the ghetto. Got
yeah,
it. Okay.
No. It was, I'm telling you, these are normal. This is just because it's a different neighborhood. Boxing is a hood sport, Brian. I just making sure you remember that.
Don't let the smooth taste fool you.
Thank you, Colt 45. Thank you, Dwyer. Well, we'd like to welcome Richard Dwyer into the program this week.
Hi, it's Dwyer, the week of the fight.
I was talking to people in Vegas about our podcast. Do you know our podcast was described in Vegas as that ejaculation show, Rafe? This podcast, that's such an insult, because we'll never jack, Rafe. We won't back up. We'll be there till you can't breathe, all right?
That is true, but look, I'm proud of the role we have in propagating the load watch movement,
yes,
making sure that happens. And I was a little bit hurt when I listened to your Akin Barak video.
Whoa.
Where the three of you basically declared load watch over. It ain't over, man. It ain't over.
Wow, the loads are just beginning. By the way, revisit my collaborations if you haven't. Of course, would have loved that. Rafe, I felt I was missing something there at Canelo Jacobs Radio Row, Podcast Row in the Media Center. And shout out to Golden Boy, by the way, for setting it up, having an organized run of just legends to chat with to preview for the fight. I had a pretty epic conversation with Brian Kenny. I don't know if you listened to that, though, but called him out on his stool there for that Pacquiao-Bradley scorecard. But my point here is there's two episodes, a two-part episode. It's not fully dated. Go back and check it out if you hadn't. Some hilarious interviews. One of them, Ak and Barak. Rafe, I put them to the test. I know these guys are hipsters. I know they're cool. I know they're providing a different look and feel to box. I had to put load watch on him and say, what do we do with this? And Barak the Boxing Bully was basically like, I'm going to come to your house if you try to drop one, you know?
Beware, everyone. Beware. If you're out there calling a fight and you're going to say that a guy has shot his load, you may see Barak the Boxing Bully.
Yes.
So have another load ready.
Thank you. So, yes, that was a great time. And
Brian,
how
way,
do we get into this conversation? Where are we right now?
I don't know where we are, but I just want to say the other thing is that, remember how they used to say Seinfeld, it's a show about nothing?
Yes.
Well, this is like our Seinfeld moment, bro. You know, State of Combat. It's a show about ejaculation.
Oh, you don't mean that. That is so disgusting and insulting. Look, let's just move on from there.
Maybe he blew his water.
No, he didn't. Enough. I'm taking a stand for Barak Best, the Boxing Bully, all right? And I'm gonna stand up for now. For at least rest of this episode, Rafe, no. You can tease the bag all you want. No messes. The point of what I was saying was, I talked to people who said, look, you guys gotta get Dwyer on there. And I was like, you know, what do we do? Is he going to be mad? They're like, look, this guy puts out epically long YouTube videos talking box, going back for years. Of course he's going to want to talk about his three favorite things. Let's talk math. Let's talk boxing. Let's talk Dwyer. They might not be wrong, Rafe.
I look, any of us who are out here working on the internet, producing content for people, we are on some level – a very deep down level attention whores, right? I think everyone understands that. And sure, if we got Dwyer on, I think it would be a great big gift to people, a big gift to boxing. And yeah, hell yeah, the guy has opinions, and I would like to drag some more out of him someday.
All right, the other bit of business I wanted to get to before we get into the show, Rafe, is your week or 2 weeks or a month in the Philippines, bro. You're back. You're safe. You've survived, Rafe. You survived. I don't know what illnesses they have in Southeast Asia, but you survived them. You're back. Please tell us about your trip, Rafe. How's life?
It was great. Yeah, it got off to a rough start. My first day in Manila, I came down with food poisoning from the airplane. And then my second day, the capital was rocked by a 6.3 Richter scale earthquake about 50 miles north of Manila. So it could only go up from there, and it did. I got my legs back under me. I was moving around. I was back in my bag. I got to hang out with – I saw a lot of my friends from the basketball world. Got to watch a PBA finals game, courtside. You know, I was living big time.
Any Americans in that game?
There were no imports. It's the All-Filipino Conference right now. But there are a lot of guys who were born and raised in the States, including actually from right here in Eagle Rock, where I'm speaking to you from right now, Alex Cabagnot, one of the all-time best players in Eagle Rock high school history, along with another PBA player, Mark Kagiwa, who's one of the most famous and best players in PBA history. Both are still in the league. Alex was starting for the San Miguel Beermen, I think down 2-1 in the finals right now.
Beermen, not the Cleveland Cavaliers, the San Miguel Beermen.
What do the Cleveland Cavaliers have to do with any? This is better than that, promise.
Well,
you just gotta hear Jimmy.
If you want more on this topic, please revisit Rafe Boogs' Pacific Rims book, which is still in paperback, I believe. It's still
you better it. You damn right. You better.
Is there an audio accompaniment to that?
Yeah, there is. I've never listened to it. I didn't get to record that one. I do remember emailing back and forth with the voice actor they hired to do it, and I had to record a number of words to help him with pronunciation. So I sent him like a little wave file of that. However, the people who have listened to it said that he did not internalize those Tagalog lessons very well. Oh. So my apologies to the Pinoy listeners to Pacific Rims who are like, who is this guy who cannot say anything right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, before we get into all things canola, Jacob, I have one more interruption for you, and it's a word from our friends and sponsors. Yes, dig it. I know you will.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back, Rafe. It's time to break down what we were looking at on paper as the fight of the year, the one, the most important one that mattered the most as the face of box. Canelo Alvarez went to Vegas to unify three of four middleweight titles and that lineal crown in a unanimous decision win over Daniel Jacobs. We had some thoughts. We had some expectations coming through. Did not turn out to be an action classic. Did not turn out to be sort of in that lineage of the two good fights we saw between Triple G and Canelo, or even the Triple G Jacobs. It wasn't really on that level. But I think the hate, there's been some hate for it, I think is a little overblown too, Rafe. I'll tell you, from being in the arena, it was very tense. Even though there wasn't a lot of action drama, it felt dramatic. It felt like a chess match. Not high-speed chess, but it was a thinking man's fight. Not one that I'll revisit a lot, but one in the end. I predicted a Jacobs win by split decision. I had a lot of thoughts inside me that it could have been a draw. In the end, Danny comes up short, losing 7-5 on two scorecards, 115-113, and of course, 116-112, 8-4 on the third. Rafe, I scored it a draw from not ringside, though. And look, here's a disclaimer, Rafe, right? Even ringside, sometimes you get a different point of view on a fight, scoring-wise, than those watching at home on the television feed. Different angles. Golden Boy chose again, by the way, to, do you want to say, is greedy the right word? Maybe. Put the media, with the exception of four quote-unquote elite media members who were able to stay quasi-ringside. And
can we name them?
There was an Ioli, a Rayfield, the AP guy, and Pugmire, I believe, was the crew, the Mount Rushmore that got added there. And
okay, I'm glad somebody got the score right.
And, you know, we sat up into the crowd. Now, is this a great seat if you and your buddies went to the fight? 1,000,000%. Eye level with the ring. But I'm going to tell you, in person, I thought Danny Jacobs, I thought you were the boy. I thought he was landing a lot more jabs than he actually was. It took me looking at the CompuBox stats to go, wait, what? And it took me afterwards rewatching the fight on DAZN to realize I gave Danny too much credit in that fight for shots that weren't landing based on my view. I had it a draw. I have not rescored it. I have rewatched it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm sorry about the ordeal that you went through in the arena on Saturday night, having
first
to
world
watch
problems, right? First
the biggest
world.
Fight of the year from a little bit farther away than you're normally used to watching from Brian. And I hope you never have to experience something so traumatic again. But first of all, the people saying this fight underwhelmed or didn't live up to expectations, I flat out disagree. It was not a great fight, but if your expectations were that, if you're heading into any boxing match, if your expectations are that it has to be an all-time classic, well, you're going to be disappointed 95% of the time. There are very rare instances where you know a fight will not miss, right? The Rios Alvarados. And that's usually when you put a few guys who just bang in there, right? This, we knew that both these guys, Jacobs and Canelo, are very multidimensional fighters and guys who are also pretty, they let the fight come to them. They're fairly judicious. They're fairly patient. And it was really what the pressure that Triple G put on both of them in their fights that brought out that extra level of excitement. And that's not to say Triple G is automatically better than them because of that. It's just that his style made for more entertaining clashes, a little bit more drama. This was fought at a really high level. I thought there was some good action. There were really good exchanges in several rounds.
Round 8, and especially.
Round 9, that when Jacobs uncorks that gigantic counter left, it reminded me, I like the sort of symmetry that we're seeing between these Canelo fights, because that big overhand left that I thought won a close round 9 for Jacobs, that big left reminded me so much of the huge right that Canelo landed on Triple G in their first fight. It was like, it was sort of a mirror image almost.
Except for this though, except for the one that Triple G ate, good Lord, did he eat it. This one, if you revisit those replays a couple times, you gotta give Canelo credit for rolling with the punch, which he did a lot of. Even that punch, which was arguably the biggest one landed in the fight, damn, Big Red's pretty good at defense. I mean, you gotta give him that.
He rolls that really well. And about the scoring and how the fight played out, it was not that surprising. That Canelo is really effing good. He's a heel. He no-sells everything. He no-sold every question you asked him in your interviews.
Although I'm on a run of 6 straight interviews now getting him to say he was born ready.
At least that. There is that. We have that saving grace, Brian. But the guy can flat out fight. Now, do I wish that he would do really, I guess you could say that you want to see Canelo really step on the gas. That in this fight, I thought that he looked like the better, more talented, just all around if superior fighter. I thought he was a half step above in class compared to Jacobs. And you could say that if you are better than like that, then you need to go in there and prove it a little more emphatically. And,
right.
And Canelo doesn't do that unless he's forced to for some reason.
Which, by the way, I think
that's an obvious opening.
And I think that's part of why I ended up scoring it so close, because this was a little bit more Canelo of old, meaning not fighting for the full three, not being active enough. Ultimately, you can say the same thing about Jacobs. I mean, he was ineffectively active. He was pumping a lot of jabs that weren't landing. He was throwing shoe-shining flurries to the body, but not really with a lot of power. He certainly had a game plan coming in on that. I do want to get your score, though, before we go any further.
Sure. I scored it 8-4. I gave Jacobs he had a couple two-round rallies, in my view. I think I gave him 6-7 and 9-10.
All right. I want to say something here. This is sort of an editorial. Look, I've put out opinions on Twitter about boxing for almost a decade now. I am very used to that being an unpopular opinion at times and people coming back at me. I have never received like the stretch of hate that I did for my score on this one, which was 6 rounds to 6, 114-114. Again, I just told you my vantage point. I thought Jacobs was doing a little bit more. I would like to go back and actually rescore it. I plan to, but still at 6-6, Rafe, the judges who were ringside had it 7-5, 7-5, and 8-4 for Canelo. So 6-6, not that much of a, you know, deviation from that. And I think we can all agree there were at least 5 or 6 really close rounds where not a whole hell of a lot happened, where there was a lot of defense. Cause ultimately, Rafe, I think you had 2 really good boxers who kind of canceled each other out in a lot of ways. They both had really good defense and they both respected the other person's power. So we didn't end up getting that action because we had such high level skill and defense, and because ultimately, and I want to break this down further, but I'll make the statement. Ultimately, Danny Jacobs came to win a decision, but I don't think he came to win the fight. He didn't back up all of his words of like, I'll get a knockout if I have to, that'd be preferred. Like, he didn't back that words up. He came in doing certain methods to try to win over the judges, but not trying to step on it and win the fight. Now, again, when you make that criticism, I'm not in there taking counterpunches from Canelo. It was a very tense fight. But I just want to close out on the haters, Rafe. Dude, people were like, F off, you're blind, like on that level. And look, I've gotten that before, but never this much in volume. Rafe, it's not like I said Danny should have won 118 to 110. I was like, a close fight in which neither man did really enough to separate themselves. Ultimately, Canelo landed the harder shots. He was insanely efficient, landed 40% of his punches overall. I mean, you got to give him that credit. He shows you that he's landing the cleaner blows. So him winning is fine. But even 6-6 with my crappy seats, Rafe, look, people got to chill out. You got to chill out here. I think what too many people do, Rafe, is obviously they listen to the broadcast, which seemed to be heavy pro Canelo. But B, they think to this day, it's 2019, to this day, people don't understand how round-by-round scoring works. I didn't watch the fight, and then at the end of it go, you know what? I thought that was a dead-even fight. My score is a draw. I did it round-by-round. That just happened to be how it added up. Like, people got to back the heck up.
What are you going to do? That's part of the game. That's why, Brian, that's why you are the guy who hosts the State of Combat podcast, a podcast about ejaculation. That's why you get the big bucks. That's why the people at CBS love you. That's why you're there on Radio Row just interviewing legends left and right. And I know you can handle that. But yeah, I think round by round scoring, unless people actually try it, which as a fan, why would you try it? It's kind of, I might kind of laugh at someone who doesn't have to do that and sit there and is like,
scoring at home.
Make a little scorecard here and do this.
Thank like, you, man. If you got the score right.
Yeah. So round by round scoring, even as many times as you explain it, as it's put out there, and it is, should be common knowledge to people who follow the sport, unless you actually try it with some of these close fights where there are rounds that could go either way and you do it and then you come out with a scorecard. It's like, whoa, that doesn't tell the story of the fight that I just watched.
And by the way, the judges, I'm close with a few of the judges and have talked to them offline, off the record. And they basically say, look, they're trained. They are trained to forget what happened the round before, as they should be, because each round is almost its own fight. You don't score the fight at the end, you score each round. So they're actually trained to forget. So you're not keeping in mind momentum shifts or one guy's landing the cleaner blows overall. Like, it's 3 minutes at a time. So people got to chill. Thank you.
You mentioned that you're friendly with some judges. What can you tell me about CJ Ross and Adelaide Bird? Like, are they cool? Are they good hangs in person?
That's not acceptable or appropriate at this point.
That woman judge who had it even, please, please, that's why I'm on fire. Because I started thinking about her.
Yes. All right.
I find myself very, very hot under the collar too when I think of CJ Ross.
All right, let's dive back into what I was talking about Daniel Jacobs. Look, Rafe, this was his chance, and you have to understand the idea of that rehydration clause, which all week suddenly he changed his tune and was like, not going to be a problem. I did against Dariya Ivanchenko. I was fine. I'm going to prove to you guys it's not going to be a problem. And the interesting thing is during that media scuffle on Wednesday where that was said, Eddie Hearn interrupted him and in front of the whole media was like, well, he doesn't have to reach 170. The fight will still be on. And by the way, if he doesn't, I may pay the fine. We'll see. So that sort of opened us up to like, maybe Danny will be strategic and blow past it. Ultimately, after the fact, he said, When he put back on water, he got to 170. But to eat, it was going to push him over 170. He tried to make a healthy decision coming in at, what is it, 173.8 or whatever it was. He ended up having to pay $1 million in penalty fines. I thought that was going to mean we're getting a more aggressive Danny. But again, it seemed like he trained to win a 12-round decision, Rafe. And that showed in there.
Yes. So when I saw before the fight on Saturday morning that Jacobs blew the rehydration limit, I was like, good for him. You know what? I think he made the right decision. Give yourself the best chance to win this fight. If he was going to have to be a little bit weaker or a little bit more uncomfortable in that 24 hours before the fight, screw it. Especially he's getting guaranteed $10 million. A million is a big check to write. But had he pulled it off, had he won, then you're like, shoot, I'm glad I spent $1 million making sure I came into this 100%. But at the how often do fighters change who they are, change their identity in the ring as a fighter for a new opponent? Even if you could say, yeah, Danny should have sold out from the beginning. He should have gone hard and looked for a knockout nonstop, really tried to, both because of the judging questions that were on everyone's mind going into any fight with Canelo, and because of how good Canelo is and how difficult he is to outpoint at this stage in his career when his defense is getting better than ever. I mean, I remember last week I was saying the way Danny Jacobs wins this is to make it look like he's outclassing Canelo, to really, you know, to have him missing left and right. Well, who was missing in this fight? It was Danny Jacobs. Yes, yeah. Canelo put him in the matrix, man, and it was beautiful at times. And could Jacobs have been more aggressive, had really gone after it, sold out? Yes, I guess you could say that. But when a guy gets in the ring, he most of the time he reverts to the kind of fighter he's been trained to be his entire life. And that Danny Jacobs is a highly skilled boxer puncher with good power, but a guy who doesn't force things very much. And to say that a guy should all of a sudden force something against one of the best opponents of his career, a guy who can make him pay if he tries something that he's not comfortable with and doesn't execute it well, that's a lot to ask. Now, there are guys who do it, who have the ability to sort of mentally get around that and just say, screw it, I'm going to do something different now. But it doesn't happen very often, and we didn't see it in this case. And I don't think Canelo does. I mean, the most we can say that we've seen that from Canelo is the second Triple G fight, when he did, he came out and he still fought his style. It was, there was still the counter punching and the fast hands and the accuracy, but the mere notion of taking the center of the ring and being on the front foot against Triple G was a huge adjustment. And again, you got to give credit to this dirty ass heel Canelo for being that good.
Jacobs is a puncher, right? Boxer, puncher. Think Sugar Ray Robinson.
No, stop thinking that. So look, what you said is right.
Yeah.
Can he just walk him down and land four punch power combinations? No. Canelo showed you next level. You nailed it, of defense, of head movement. Look, the guy's brilliant. The guy's freaking brilliant. Canelo is amazing. Rafe, this performance from Canelo, even though I'm seeing some haters saying that he didn't do enough, and you kind of opened the show saying that. I'm not saying you're a hater, but I do get what you're saying. Like, Terrence Crawford would never finish a fight sort of backpedaling to a decision, right? He's going to close that fight out. Canelo, who seemed winded at times during Danny Jacobs' adjustment when he made that rush in the second half, didn't seem to finish strong, yet his defense was so insanely good that Danny couldn't become Sugar Ray Robinson there. I'm just saying that overall, I feel like Danny stuck too much to the idea of my best chance to win here is a decision, which in theory would be his worst chance, and didn't sit down on his punches. In the early rounds, when he started slow, it was all pitter-patter, and it seemed like he was trying to get the judges on his side from an activity standpoint. And that's not the worst strategy, but he never tried to discipline Canelo and never really committed to hitting him with something hard that would say, okay, I'm going to change the fight in my direction. What I saw was Danny starting a little slow, Canelo dominating those 3, 4, 5 rounds, that stretch in the middle, and then you got to give Danny credit. Went southpaw, made some good adjustments. Canelo adjusted back. You actually saw a pretty good chess match in the end. But if you're Danny, I don't know how you can come out of there and not feel like, man, did I really go for it? And, you know, look,
what does going for it mean? Give yourself a chance to get dropped or knocked out? Maybe. And when Canelo is operating on such a level that I think Canelo comes out of this fight kind of needing to be ranked higher pound for pound than he already is. I mean, Canelo is showing you that he actually might be the best fighter in the world.
He certainly has the best resume in the world. Now, we can revisit some of those collaborations from 5 years ago with Austin Trout and Arislandi Lara, and those collaborations were not at that. Those were the fights where I would criticize Canelo for not separating himself. I didn't get that feeling as much in, although I did see that criticism, I felt that he actually did enough to really show himself to be a not a huge gap in ability compared to Jacobs, but just a better fighter and fought a better fight on the night and deserved to win. If you talk about should he be higher on pound for pound lists, I think it's getting there. And maybe it probably already is there, because he's fighting better competition than guys who we rank higher than him regularly. And yeah, is he washing them? No, but he's beating them, and with Triple G, who I don't think he beat once. I think he drew once with Triple G and lost once, but still. He fought better against Triple G than anyone else, I believe, including Danny Jacobs. And that just shows you how good both of those fighters are, or at least they were. We'll see how Triple G looks at age 37 fighting against dinner rolls in a month or two.
Yeah, pizza rolls. Yeah, that's the key. We're going to get to Triple G in a second with his new trainer and all that. Damn, Canelo's good. And again, while there could be an argument of did he not do enough, I think I'm right when I say they kind of canceled each other out. So he sort of did what he could, and his defense was so on point. And at the same time, Rafe, I mentioned that word efficiency. I think the key to this fight was Canelo was so perfectly conservative in the fact that everything he threw seemed to matter. And although we make the joke or we make the narrative coming in that, well, it doesn't matter if it's close, Canelo will get the nod. Some of that is boxing, typical boxing corruption, or some of that is typical, this is the A side, this is the money man of the moment, he gets the push. But I think some of that we're starting to realize is that efficient style. Each round, yeah, you land more jabs than him, but he lands the two or three most important punches, and they're well-timed, and they're strategic, and he's learning how to do this thing efficiently, which will only help him age better, that it's kind of hard to say anything negative about him inside the ring, outside of the, yeah, I thought Triple G beat him twice, and I did, by the way. And he did. He did. You're not, and you ain't. He beat Canelo twice. Yet Canelo's still figuring out how to get better, Rafe, and he's only 28.
And that's the thing. I think he is getting better, and you see it in whether you measure it in terms of his efficiency in his fight, the way that in almost every round he landed the most telling blows. Now, did he maybe get outworked in a couple? Does that huge shot Danny landed in the ninth round mean, you know, it wasn't a shutout, but Canelo can land these beautiful, clean punches against pretty any boxer in his division or in the world that makes any sense for him to face. And we keep seeing it again and again and again. Did he separate himself from Lara and Trout and Triple G and now Danny Jacobs? Maybe not in a huge way, but you know what? None of those guys looked like the brilliant tacticians or the destroyers or whatever it was that they were supposed to be the best in the world at or close to at the time when they fought him. They didn't look, he made them not look that way too. You know, that's what happens when you put fighters at the very top of the sport in with each other. And that's why I think we shouldn't complain about this fight. It was competitively a important, meaningful, significant, and high level fight. And we got to see what happens when two of those guys compete. It doesn't have to light my pants on fire. It doesn't have to give me a stiddy, but it's we want to see the best fight the best and how that plays out so we can determine who really are the best fighters in each division.
Yeah.
Wow. It is hot.
Wow. It is good.
Going back.
You're excited.
No.
I didn't, I skimmed watching it again the second time. Do you have anything to say about the zone broadcast in general, Rafe? I'm going to tell you that I felt they were way too Canelo-centric and they were missing what Danny was doing there, even though I liked me some Sergio Mora and some Chris Mannix and Brian Kenny, who I did interviewed all three on those podcasts last week. I thought they were great. What were your thoughts?
So I don't like to criticize broadcast teams like over the top. It just it seems tacky. They're doing their best in the moment. My big disagreement, and I guess it was a serious issue, was there were moments in the fight where they seemed to be, in my opinion, calling some of the action wrong, where Canelo would be doing something good, having some success, and instead someone would mention that, oh, Jacobs landed something big there. It just was, I think their overall picture of the fight they gave as a competitive one that Canelo deserved to win, which is how, if you ask me to boil the fight down into 10 words, that's probably what I would say. But there were moments along the way where I was like, what are you guys watching? I think that the broadcast team was harping on how the southpaw stance didn't help Danny Jacobs at all. I saw him doing some of his best work out of the southpaw stance. I thought that Jacobs was a much more effective counterpuncher from southpaw.
His best, his second half rally was basically southpaw.
And that was when he was able to land some of those telling shots that he wasn't landing from orthodox. Yes, maybe his jab was better in orthodox. I think it was better. And that's a fine point to make. But it wasn't creating the openings for him to land punches that were actually going to win him rounds. And when he did, when he switched to southpaw, he was really good at landing those counter right hooks when Canelo would try and lead with a straight right. Sometimes it would land, sometimes it wouldn't, but Jacobs was really good at coming back and being successful with those hooks. And even the biggest punch of the fight, that overhand left, which was a counter punch itself, sort of a catch and shoot style left that Danny Jacobs landed. It was his biggest punch in the fight, I should say, that he landed in the ninth round. That right after that, the DAZN crew said, and I'm pretty sure that was out of orthodox. And I was like, I rewound just to make sure I wasn't crazy. And it was out of southpaw. So that kind of stuff I noticed. But at the same time, look, most of us are never going to get the opportunity to do any better. Most of us can't do any better. It happens.
Well, I like their personalities. I like what they did. Maybe it was a little bit of an off night, although they had better seats than me. Although Dan Rafael had a better seat than me. And in round one, in which nothing happened, but I thought Danny Jacobs was busier and landed more, CompuBox tells me that Danny Jacobs outlanded Canelo 8-1 in round one, and Dan Rafael tweeted, dominant clear round for Canelo.
Well, what are you going to do? Brian, you know as well as everyone else in the press row world, the weird demands of that job, because you're not just there to cover and score and watch the fight. You're there to tweet through the fight. You're looking down at 16 different things.
I'm doing a live blog during it. Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Yep. I'm looking down almost half the fight. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm correcting my spelling errors in a live play-by-play blog. It is what it is, Rafe. We tried the best. It was what it was. Let's talk about where these fighters go next. Now, for Danny Jacobs, the talk from both him and Eddie Hearn after seemed to be, let's move up to 68. We're having trouble making this weight perfectly. Well, he seems to be making 160 okay. It's the whole idea of fighting in the IBF for that rehydration clause, or fighting Canelo where there's a rehydration clause. I don't know. I'd kind of like to see Danny against Demetrius Andrade, but if he goes up to 68 and maybe fights a David Lemieux and tries to chase titles there, that's fine. But aren't all the real good 68s with PBC basically?
Well, except for Callum Smith, who's at 68 and hasn't fought since winning the WBSS Super Middle Tournament last year, ending the glorious career of George Groves, a man whose hand I would like to shake someday. And by the way, you got to meet the Cobra. Holy
yeah,
crap.
Yeah, let's not bury
Stop
the lead on
podcast,
there.
Podcast, Brian. Tell
All
me
right,
about
time that. Time out on this. Shout out to the Irish crew, the 80K crew, the Godinez crew. So I was walking, so they put the Billboard Music Awards took over the MGM this week. It was clearly the more important event. They got the better media rooms. We had to use a conference room like deep in the conference center. So in layman's terms, to walk from the MGM casino and hotel where everyone's staying to the MGM conference room area, it's a pretty damn long walk. I mean, it's a hike. I'm walking, suddenly Carl Froch is next to me. And I'm like, holy crap, I'm walking with Ellie Sekpak, who, by the way, great dude in person. And I start asking Carl Froch, I make some ADK jokes. I'm like, Eddie Hearn says, you have a nose too pretty these days to fight. And he goes, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm thinking about coming back. And I'm like, what? I'm like, bro. I'm like, you got to fight Golovkin. He's slowing down. He's like, yeah, he is slowing down, isn't he? He's like, okay. He goes, well, Eddie might be right about my nose. It is pretty. I don't know if I want to hurt it against him. I go, come on. Kessler just did a fake retirement or fake comeback and then he retired again. I'm like, you got to fight him. He wants to fight you. He goes, does he? I'm like, yeah, of course he does. I'm just BSing him. He goes, well, I just talked to him about 2 days ago. I'm like, did he say he wanted to fight you? And then Ellie jumped in that moment and started his video, like kind of unannounced. But I had plans. I had my phone ready. I was going to do the same thing, and I was going to have him give a shout-out to this podcast, to Alex Godinez, to my boy Rafe, and it didn't happen. I got Ellie'd.
That's all right. I'm just pumped for you that you got FaceTime with the Cobra. That's off. That I think that's magic, Brian.
He's a very strikingly handsome Dan Jacobs. Yeah, boy. He's the boy. That's for real. So if Jacobs goes to 68, I think he could certainly be a player. He's got the boxing skills. He can punch a little bit. Could punch a lot for 60. Didn't punch on Saturday night much. But I don't know. I feel like he can go to face Andrade if he wanted to, and I feel like he's in that fight. It'd be a great matchup. But let's talk about Canelo, because here's the deal. We all assume it's going to be Canelo Triple G3, and we're going to talk about Triple G at length more, but what a heel move from Triple G on Saturday night, sitting ringside in dark shades and then tweeting out that quote about, like, this was a sparring match. It was boring. Got to give the people what they want. You know, it's me paraphrasing, but it's hilarious. We'll get to that. We want that fight. It seems like everybody wants that fight except for Canelo, who didn't on his own bring up Triple G's name at all. Credit to Chris Mannix, who doubled back during the post-fight interview a second time. And finally, Canelo agreed, well, yeah, look, if he wants it and the people want it, I'll beat him again. Typical Canelo sort of badass answer. Canelo, Rafe, it seems, doesn't want the idea of Triple G because there's no title at stake, and his trainer, Chepo Reynoso, one of his two trainers, has convinced him that the idea of being the undisputed middleweight champion should be higher on his list, which would mean a fight against Andrade potentially in September, if Andrade could turn around quick after fighting Maciej Sulecki coming up in Rhode Island, or Rafe moving up to 68 again and facing Callum Smith. Oscar also told, I think, Mannix, that they might want to do an even softer touch in between for like June if they could. Rafe, I don't know if you heard Joseph Markovsky of DAZN on this podcast late last week, but he sort of, when I was like, look, Canelo's make a lot of money. He can fight whoever he wants, right? Joe kind of interrupted me and was like, well, we wouldn't have signed the deal if we thought that was the case. We signed this deal knowing Canelo only wants to face the best. I don't know if you saw Lance Pugmire's story, but there's quotes in there from Joe Markovsky after the fight saying, of course DAZN wants a Triple G fight next, and that's what we're going to call Canelo about next week and start. So, Rafe, this could be an interesting little first battle in the marriage. Who's going to win?
Nothing about this surprises me, Brian. First of all, Canelo let's revisit Canelo's collaboration with Triple G. He played the string out with Golden Boy for years before taking on Triple G, right? He beat Miguel, first Cotto was ducking Triple G when he was holding the lineal middleweight belt, even though he was fighting at like 154 pounds. And so who'd he fight? Canelo, bigger money. Blah, 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 blah. Canelo wins that fight. He gets the belt. He won't fight Triple G. He's fighting borderline bums. We get the Canelo fight. They let Triple G age into what they believed was a slightly more vulnerable version of Gennady Golovkin with an eye. And you know what? We'll never know if Canelo would have beaten Triple G in 2016, early 2016 or 2015. That ship has sailed. We'll never know. We can guess, but that's one of these things in boxing. You can't turn back the clock. You can't fall in love with a fighter or a fight who no longer exists. And this is what Canelo does. Like he's doing his heel thing. He's no selling Triple G, treating him like any other opponent rather than the guy who has given him the toughest fights in recent years, who most of the boxing public believes has beaten him at least once. Many, many, many people think that he has beaten him twice, and he's no-selling him, treating him like just another jabroni without a belt. That is heel Canelo to a T. Does that mean he won't fight Triple G? Of course it doesn't mean that. He's already fought Triple G once. He probably thinks that if they fight again, he's got a good chance of winning a clear decision, or maybe even knocking him out as Triple G rounds out into his late 30s and is more inactive than ever and is now trained by Jonathan Banks. I'm sure we'll talk about that soon. Do I think that it means that Canelo is going to now duck Triple G? No. Do I think it could mean that that Canelo does fight other people first while continuing to let Triple G age like a fine wine? I would not put that past him, Brian. Yes, I would not put that past him.
Here's the deal.
DAZN, I think, gets the rubber match eventually. Do they get it next? I don't think so. If anything, I could see it being a May 2020 fight, possibly even a September 2020 fight.
No,
and folks, that's not the way men do it.
That's not. I mean, I've seen many guys
look subpar.
Yeah, all right. I got it.
Brian, if you tell me that instead of if we get Canelo Andrade, Canelo Callum Smith.
It would probably be more likely Callum Smith, because here's why. Eddie Hearn promotes Callum Smith. They could do it in England to a giant crowd if they wanted
to. Eddie Hearn promotes Andrade too.
I know, but Andrade's not a draw, and he's a low risk, high reward, low, you know what I'm talking about. You know where I'm going with that. So Canelo would like the idea of adding a real super middleweight. So Canelo seems to be all about what's history right now. So DAZN could probably get behind that, probably. Right? There's some things there. But here's the deal. I get heel Canelo's perspective here. The perspective is this. I just had potentially a really hard fight with Jacobs. Now, it didn't turn out to be really hard, but stamina-wise, you know what I mean? It was a battle. And does he want to go right back into a brutal fight with Triple G where there's nothing at stake and he's already beaten Triple G twice and he has seemingly nothing to gain from it but money, which is already guaranteed? So it's not like we're saying he's going to fight, good boy Gabriel next. I mean, he wants to fight legitimate challenges with some kind of stakes at it. I mean, yeah, if he fought Andre, would that be interesting? Technically, yeah, it'd be fantastic. But Rafe, I don't know, man. Like, they got a lot of money coming to him, and they need his fights to feel like Super Bowls. They need him to be the pay-per-view pillars along with the two Joshua fights per year.
Well, this might be a question that we ask our boy, the former HBO sports marketing executive, Evan Rutkowski of the Fisticionados podcast. Wow, was that a plug? This might be a question for Evan, in that, is there an argument on DAZN side for maybe marinating this a little bit by stringing out, getting both of these big names fighting at different times on their platform, that they have a platform, and using that to keep subscribers interested, using that, okay, so we got a Triple G fight next month. Maybe if these guys keep winning, it builds up that third one and keeps the subscriber base tuned in, plugged in on DAZN in a way that people aren't signing in and like jumping on for $20, jumping off, jumping on for $20 and jumping off. Maybe they can use it as a way to keep sustained interest and sustain subscribers. I don't know if I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I even believe that, but I would be curious to hear someone who knows the business speak to that idea.
And I'm a DAZN subscriber, right? I'm paying my $9.99 a month. I heard Canelo was in the fold. I said, okay, I know how Canelo operates.
Yeah, he only faces the best. That's interesting, Rafe. I guess if you built this up for next May's Cinco de Mayo fight, and what if in the meantime, Triple G fought Andrade and had a chance to get the fourth belt and come into the third trilogy fight with Canelo, giving Canelo the chance to be the undisputed middleweight champion? There's some history. Would Triple G beat Andrade at this point?
I look, it's obviously a dangerous fight for Triple G if they ever get there, but look, if Triple G can't beat Andrade, then I don't really care if he fights Canelo again either. If he's fallen off to that degree, then good for Andrade. Let him fight Canelo with a win under Triple G, over Triple G on his belt. I still think that he's good enough to beat Demetrius Andrade, who I think is really, really underrated. But somebody's going to have to fight. He has to fight somebody eventually, and somebody's going to have to step up and fight him. And I just think that if we're getting consistently good fights, even if they aren't the big fight, if we're getting good fights like Canelo, Callum Smith, Triple G after the dinner roll fight against Demetrius Andrade, if we're getting consistently good fights, then whoever wins them, wherever it leads, that's good for the sport. And I think fans, the guy who beat Triple G is not a bad thing to be if that ever comes to
that's true.
To happen.
And Tom Loeffler told me on this podcast last week that Triple G is also seriously considering moving to 68 for the right fight. So if he lost to Andrade and you lost some more of that sizzle to his name, he could do a fight at 68, rematches with Lemieux or Jacobs, and you got big business. You got fun fights again. So that's not the end of the world, clearly.
Brian, remember at the beginning of this deal with DAZN and Canelo, when they signed it, we were talking about it. We said, well, 11 fights, $365 million. How are they going to get their value out of this? Will Canelo fight the guys we want him to fight? It's all guaranteed money, right? But one, Canelo, throughout his career, that is the one thing, even at the peak of my Canelo-hating career, I had to give him credit for stepping up to challenges. Now, he probably stepped up to those challenges with some confidence that he would get the rub in a lot of close rounds, but whatever. We don't have to relitigate that 700 times. So Canelo is a guy who cares, who fights for his legacy in a way that we see a lot of fighters not really care about these days. He also, we said that it wouldn't be that bad given the sort of Mayweather standard of these long-term deals with gigantic superstars in the sport. If he takes more of a one for me, one for them type of approach to these 11 fights, is that everything I've ever dreamed of as a boxing fan? No, but I can live with that. So if we do see him fight David Lemieux at 164 next, so Lemieux can make weight, something like that, is that a great fight? No. But it would be fun. Lemieux, it would be another version of Canelo Kirkland. People loved that fight when it happened. So if we get a one for, if he basically goes for a one tough fight, one softer touch, one tough fight, one softer touch throughout this deal, especially if he fights a little more frequently than two times a year, which it seems like he might be interested in now, I'm not going to complain about that. I realize that that's the world we live in.
Yeah, and to do your plan, sorry, I keep interrupting you. To do your plan, you'd have to fight three times though, because he's sticking to the Cinco de Mayo and Mexican Independence Day September dates, the main September. He's sticking to those two, and you can't have a one for me during those two, in my opinion. You can't have another Liam Smith on one of those two. You can fight David Lemieux in December at the Garden, you know what I mean? Like he did Rocky Fielding, but I think you got to kind of keep those dates as big deals on the calendar for DAZN.
And if they do go the marination route, I know this would be probably hard to pull off because Golden Boy might not want to risk a prospect, but you know what would help build some, what would be a nice little ingredient to throw in that Triple G Canelo 3 marinade? It would be Triple G sending Jaime Munguia to hell and saying, I beat the guy who's coming up behind you. I beat the rising star from your country, and I want you next, Canelo. I want my Juan Manuel Marquez Pacquiao just deserves against you. You can't run no more. I'm coming to your home country and beating Jaime Munguia and cutting promos like a maniac.
Jesse Vargas.
There are ways to marinate that in fun ways. There's guys coming up from 154 who they might be pie in the sky, unlikely type fights to get made. But if you could get, a Jarrett Hurd coming up from 154, if there was some way to get him into a fight with one of those guys, damn, that would be fun. Munguia is there for one of them.
You're not going to cross. You're not going to cross streams here. DAZN is staying in house.
I'm sorry,
but Jesse Vargas on this pod though did say that he is he's going after Jaime Munguia. So that's a fun DAZN fight to make involving both Oscar and Eddie Hearn. So it'll be interesting.
Let me ask you one thing, Brian. I'm genuinely curious. Who are the fighters? Who's going to beat Canelo? If you have to pick one or two guys to get there, to be good enough, to catch him at the right moment, Name a fighter better than Chris Algieri that's going to get a win, get that first non-Floyd win over Canelo Alvarez. Does Floyd have to come back and do it again? Does it have to be a Kovalev, you are next, my friend, situation? Who can actually get this W over heel Canelo?
There's a guy here from Sheffield that can actually serve you your ass, knock you spark out, and you don't like it.
Does the term 80K mean anything to you?
Would be so there for that, brother.
Does a sellout at Wembley mean anything for you? Canelo and the Cobra? No, that's not happening. All right, it's a great question. There's still the idea that Errol Spence, if he comes out of the welterweight division and actually gets to face Terrence Crawford, you know, has a body that would work at 54 or Canelo weight, or maybe even as a small middleweight. Interesting long-term play there. Jarrett Hurd is interesting, but I feel like Canelo is too slick for him, even with Hurd being giant. Both Charlos, I just don't think they have it to be a super elite like Canelo. You know, they still have time to prove it, but I just don't, I think Canelo's he's too slick, he's too smart, you know?
I'm with you there.
And he's too big in some ways too. So, no, there really isn't. I mean, Triple G had the boxing IQ, the powerful jab, and enough of a right hand to make Canelo not be able to take over the fight, where, again, two close fights, I thought he won both. And the first one I didn't think was that close. So, not old Triple G, not young Floyd Mayweather, maybe somebody at 68. No, I mean, look, he'd beat a Callum Smith. He would. He can't fight any of the PBC super middleweights, but he'd beat all of them in my eyes, too. Maybe it would be going way out of his way at 75 for the wrong guy.
So it is a Kovalev, you are next, my friend, situation.
I don't know, man.
No, I might even – Canelo is so good now that I might even – I think I would favor him against Kovalev.
Now, what about Andrade? Could Andrade be the Swiss Army knife? Could he do what Jacobs tried to do but wasn't able to pull it off? Is he quicker, longer, more creative, or is he just another, in a way, an Arislandi Lara that Canelo will just be smart – put on pressure when he needs to and get the W.
I think Andrade has a shot to have that kind of shutout performance. Maybe not shutout, but just sterling boxing performance and actually clearly outbox him. But I wouldn't consider it likely.
What about a wild card like Billy Joe Saunders who has a squirrely, almost Sergio Martinez style, has sneaky pop, can box.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. He's so unreliable. We don't know if and when he's going to make 160 again.
Want to catch up with Canelo one of these days too, the decision thing, Rafe. And I'm going to be honest with you. That's part of why I picked Jacobs and stood by Jacobs and believed it would happen. I felt like eventually there would just be a night where the judges didn't like Canelo's flavor and it was a close fight and they gave it to the other guy. Look, it happened to Oscar eventually, right? Like it happened.
It happened to, I mean, Tim Bradley, Manny Pacquiao, apologies to Brian Kenny, you nutcase. Yes, it eventually there will be some bizarre thing that happens in a fairly close fight, even perhaps in a not close fight like Pacquiao Bradley won. But I don't, how do we predict when that comes? I don't mean when will the judges screw up and give someone else a win. I mean, who at this point is good enough to beat him?
It's a great
like
question.
That you would expect at this point. There are lots of guys who are good enough to beat him.
Even the Spence
idea.
But
who at this point do you think will do it?
Even the Spence idea, we're talking about him moving up two weight classes. You know, like he would have to start being active and blowing away the Thurmans and the Porters and then the Crawford. He'd have to beat, you know, I mean, like he'd have to do a lot to really, then he'd have to prove he could beat like a Jarrett Hurd type guy. And I'm not saying that's impossible, but it doesn't seem like something's just going to happen. So I don't know. It's a great question, Rafe, but let's roll on to, the Triple G talk. All right. Triple G showed up that weekend. He had a hell of a heel week as we saw coming in closer because he changed the spelling of his name. He added an I. He said, this is the way it was all along. And we were all getting it wrong. And he shows up at Canelo weekend, has a press conference. We got Eddie Hearn's take on it.
Yeah, the press conference had sex toys, anal beads, religion, voodoo dolls, donkey talk. I had a bit of everything.
All right, had none of that. It had Jonathan Banks, though. Rafe, what the hell is going on here? So this was the – look, no one seemed to break this news. It was kept secret. Saturday morning, Triple G shows up. Even John Skipper's there, and he brings out Jonathan Banks. I'm very surprised by this. It makes sense relationship-wise that Banks was Klitschko's trainer, Tom Loeffler, the former K2 promoter who's now running Triple G Promotions and is still in the Triple G business. It makes sense the relationship-wise. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense trainer-wise unless you're looking at it from the standpoint – that Triple G's 37. He's got the amateur background. He's more or less training himself, if you can believe that. Not necessarily Beboot Shumanov style, but you know what I'm talking about here. But I don't know. I don't think Jonathan Banks helped Klitschko. In fact, you can argue that Banks hurt Klitschko in his two most recent losses. So it didn't pop out to me as like, if it was like a Joe Goosen or a Freddie Roach or someone where you're like, oh wow, are they going to make him a little bit more reckless and offensive? Like, what's this going to do, Rafe?
I think this lends credence, it's unfair to say confirms the theory, but it certainly lends credence to the idea that what Triple G was shopping around for in a new trainer was not a trainer who was going to teach him something new about the sport, give him a new element to his game, give him some kind of Freddie Roach, Miguel Cotto late career surge, but instead a guy who would work for the money that Triple G wants to pay. And Triple G is comfortable with, probably because of, you know, knowing Vlad Klitschko through K2 Promotions and having that relationship and getting the word from Vlad that, yeah, Banks is a good enough dude. You'll be fine. I don't know exactly what he wants, but it seems like he prioritized getting the right deal money wise that he wanted. And maybe he just trusts himself to train the way he wants to train and get himself ready for fights. And as long as he's got a guy in the corner with him that he feels okay with, that's what he wants. We'll have to wait and see in the ring if that turns out to be a good decision or a bad. Maybe he is one of these guys who basically is just training himself. You know, time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, maybe just strategy wise, maybe he knows what he's doing, and maybe he just needs somebody to keep the workouts in order and be there for him. I mean, I don't mean to completely downgrade Jonathan Banks. It's just we haven't seen a lot from him at the highest level yet. So he does this press conference, and I'll give him credit. He's been acting like a heel like crazy lately.
Oh, wait, Brian. You know what? I think I'm coming all the way back around. I'm in on this. You know why? Is Golovkin gonna get to wear the Kronk shorts? Cause I might have to go rub one out for that. I mean, that is awesome.
Come on. I mean,
we know what this show is about.
Oh God. No. Okay. No.
Come on. Golovkin right, here's the deal. And Kronk shorts. Golovkin and Kronk shorts.
Yeah.
I'm pumped.
That's gross. Are you gonna crap in a bottle again? You got anything? You got any other fluids to give us? All right. So he acted like a bad heel lately. Even Saturday night, hilarious, the heel stuff he put out. But in this Saturday morning press conference, he was happy Golovkin again. He was the guy that I said last week was dead. And he was doing it in English too, Rafe. So maybe there's just something to the lack of trust. Relationship had gone too far, not only with Abel, but with his old management team, old networks, like we said last week. Maybe it's just the complete changing of the scene has restored him, but he seemed like a nice guy again. He had decent answers, but what do you make of his answers on why the Abel thing fell apart? Because the reporters there came at him with both Abel's comments about disloyalty, and Triple G had nothing but nice things to say about Abel at that point. And he basically said that it wasn't money that broke them apart, that it was it seems to be the lack of strategy in the Canelo second fight. And since then, he's just decided now to go in a different direction.
Who knows? I don't know that his explanation that he wanted that going in a different direction would allow him to grow as a fighter. I kind of don't buy that. But it seems to me like a way to give a reasonable excuse with a criticism of Abel Sanchez that a lot of people have made before, and that his in-ring strategy doesn't seem to compute, at least in any noticeable way. He never seems to say like what experts think he should be saying in the corner. He was using sort of like a pre-baked explanation that sounds better than, look, I didn't want to pay this guy. I haven't made as much money as I think I deserve. and this is a huge contract, and I'm too old to get another one after this in all likelihood. So I'm going to make a totally reasonable decision and be greedy.
Yeah. I mean, it could be.
He's going to start. He's saying he's been sharing long enough now. Start being greedy.
Yes, yes, yes. F the needy. Yes. Interesting. Look, we expect him to blow away Steve Rolls, although Lou DiBella is constantly in my ear telling me Rolls is pretty good, but it should be a good short-term litmus test to see how Triple G looks at this age, how he looks with Jonathan Banks in the corner, all that, to try to build toward a bigger fight. It'll be interesting to see what that bigger fight will be. I hope if Andrade goes after, beats Shuletsky, I'd like to see Triple G and Andrade. I think that'd be a really important fight to get Triple G back on the title map. Rafe, quickly, we got to wrap up what else happened this weekend. I didn't see it. You watched the highlights from that ESPN card. You watched the main event. You better believe Artur Beterbiev knocked out Hot Rod Kalidjic. Any thoughts?
I just think, look, I shouldn't, I don't know if I'm really in the best position to say this, because I haven't gone back and revisited all of Hot Rod Kalidjic's collaborations. The only time I ever saw him fight was when he looked damn good, and I thought he beat Marcus Brown. But Marcus Brown also looked like hot garbage in that fight. He's just very flat. I don't know exactly. Maybe Hot Rod just shut him down. I don't really know what happened. But so I thought he was a credible opponent, but I never thought that he was going to beat Beterbiev. And people were out here talking about how, oh, Hot Rod's a great upset pick. Yeah, Beterbiev got knocked down by a big puncher in Callum Johns, and then he got up and knocked that mofo out. Beterbiev is a dangerous fighter. Is he perfect? No. He gets hit. He got hit a bunch of times clean in just about four rounds with Hot Rod Kalidjic. But you better be able to deter him with the punches you're hitting him with. Otherwise, we'll see like he did in this fight. He walked straight through him like a hot knife through butter. Through butter, Brian. And just put a whoopee on him and got him out of there quick. Keep this guy active, please, Uncle Bob, Grandpa Bob, Top Rank, Cousin Todd, everyone over there in
Evan
Top
Korn.
Rank. Please keep Beterbiev active. Please do not leave him alone. Keep him in the ring, because he's a fun fighter. I want to see him mix it up with these guys. He can box. He's got pedigree. And he's a big-ass puncher. What is there not to like about that?
Speaking of Roxy, I saw her in person for the first time this weekend.
Please leave her alone, Brian.
Thank you.
Don't make me send Nico Macias down there. You're still in LA for a few days. He will come down from Tehachapi and just get all up in your space.
I like seeing the corner man and the Alex Godinez interacting on Twitter because of this show. I like that, right? If we're developing a community of jackers, you know? Anyway,
building bridges. It's what it's all about.
I'm losing my voice here from illness, but let's wrap this up. Virgil Ortiz Jr. in the Canelo co-main looked fan-friggin-tastic, blowing away veteran Mauricio Herrera with a right hand from hell after he knocked him around a while and knocked him down once. Rafe, I was not fully woke on Virgil Ortiz Jr. 13-0, 13 KOs, and big for this division. And he just moved up to this division, still wants to go back down to 40 to win a title. Golden Boy's got something here, Rafe. I know Herrera's 6-7 in his last 13 fights, and he's 38 years old, but you don't blow him away with one punch like you did, Rafe.
No, Ortiz, I think what really got, what convinced me, and it's funny, this is just secondhand, so maybe I shouldn't necessarily put as much weight into it, but in that interview series from a week ago when Robert Garcia hit on the Abel Sanchez Triple G split and a bunch of other things, there's one moment in that where they ask him about Virgil Ortiz, who's training in their gym in Riverside, and Robert says, look, he doesn't have the resume yet to be put in this position, but if he stays at 147, I think he could, not would, but he said, I think he could beat guys like Danny Garcia. So he thinks, he sees what this guy does in the gym and thinks that he's already good enough. Maybe he's not ready career-wise, but already has the talent, ability to go in there and compete at the top of these divisions. So whether it's 140, 147, yeah, give me more Virgil Ortiz.
And Joseph Diaz Jr. with his new green hair. handled Freddie Fonseca with ease. And the key here is this was Joseph Diaz Jr., a former featherweight title challenger, moving up to 130. And now he's able to go for the knockout. He's much stronger physically. Rafe, he looked fantastic. I know Fonseca wasn't necessarily world class here, but now he's calling out Tevin Farmer. That's a DAZN fight I can get into, Rafe.
And did you, I don't know if you were at the press conference towards the end, whenever Eddie Hearn said this, but I did see Chris Mannix writing about it. And a few other folks mentioned that Hearn has brought up this idea before of staging on DAZN. And why not? This is why for all of Eddie Hearn's blowhardness, I still like the guy. I really like the guy because he's entertaining and he's willing to think outside the box, come up with fun ideas. You hear this thing he's suggesting about doing a Matchroom versus Golden Boy mega card?
Yes.
Now, it doesn't necessarily have to have Canelo on. It doesn't have to have AJ on. It doesn't have to have the biggest stars. But imagine like a Virgil Ortiz versus a 140 guy from Matchroom. Or does Golden Boy have any kind of second rate heavyweights to throw in there with Dave Allen or David Price? I mean, just like Tyshawn this sort
Dong.
Of Secret Wars type thing where it's like promoter versus promoter. And you know, I mean, the boxing fans right now are the hardcores are all in on these promoter wars. Why not turn it into a show?
Yes.
That's awesome. They could do a home and home, one in Staples Center, one in the O2, or if they get a big name involved, if they can bring the Cobra back on one of these cards to fight Danny Jacobs at one. Oh no, that's the same one. To fight Canelo at one. Well, whatever. If we can get the Cobra in, it got to happen at Wembley.
It's all about the lube, man.
It really is. Also, Rafe, Saddam Ali was shockingly in his return back to welterweight sent to hell by Anthony Young. Wow, Rafe. I guess that's the end for now for Saddam Ali.
Yes, please. Let's cue Prince Nassim.
Yes, I think he should finish. Also on this undercard, John Ryder, who was supposed to be in the co-main against David Lemieux, he knocked out some guy that you never heard of, and he looked great. The guy's name is Bilal Akaway for a vacant interim WBA super middleweight title, which is a BS title, but I wonder if they prop up Danny Jacobs to fight this guy, John Ryder. John Ryder's a fun fighter. He's not great, though. He's going to get beaten by any elite, but there's a belt that's just waiting for a Canelo or a Jacobs to go after and take, Rafe.
Good. Let's make some fun fights.
All right. Let's get into this weekend. Do you care and all that? You ready? You in on this? You down with this?
I'm ready.
I have not
looked too far into the future. So let's try not to care too much.
There's no other news we need to hit up, right? Nothing else happened in boxing.
No.
We covered it. No. Okay. I want to start you off with Friday night from your backyard, Rafe, of Corona, California. That's kind of right.
That's quite close. Yeah, I've been there.
Okay, it's a showbox card, and it's Ruben Villa versus Luis Alberto Lopez, 10 rounds featherweights. Do you care?
As my showbox answer, as always, is I will listen to the Showtime Championship Boxing Podcast with Eric Raskin and Kiernan Mulvaney,
yes.
And they'll probably make me care. Right now, I don't care.
All right, we have a Friday Eddie Hearn smaller DAZN Brit card from Nottingham, England, and it's Lee Wood versus Ryan Doyle for Wood's Commonwealth featherweight title.
I care about anything that happens in Carl Froch's hometown.
I will say the co-main is Jordan Gill. You need to watch this guy. He's a featherweight. He's fantastic, dude. I called one of his own Brit fights back when they were giving out free money. Do you know he's trained by that guy, Dave? You know that guy, Dave Caldwell?
The guy who trained David Hay, right?
Yeah, Caldwell, that guy's a good trainer. Yeah, you got to watch this kid, Jordan Gill. He's fantastic. All right, Friday night, Springfield, Mass, Rafe. UFC Fight Pass.
Naismith Hall, Basketball Hall of Fame.
I think it's at that new casino they put there, the new MGM. Abraham
Shout
Nova.
Shout out to Kevin Freeman, UConn Huskies.
Versus Mario Ezequiel Sayal Lozano, 10 rounds junior lightweight. We don't care about this crap.
No.
Friday night in Burbank, California, untelevised, but this is kind of in your backyard. Vyacheslav Shabransky versus Alan Green, 8 rounds light heavyweights, Rafe.
Oh, I think I know what I'm doing that night.
Wow. You probably get free tickets for that, right?
I like to pay my own way so I don't have to say thank you to anyone.
Oh, wow. Also on Friday night in London, untelevised in the States, there's a one-night middleweight tournament, 3-round fights called Ultimate Boxer, and it's 2 X's in Boxer. Why not just go triple X, Rafe, at this point, right?
I mean, that way at least you can get Yusuf Mack on the card.
Oh, God. Also Friday in Hollywood, Florida, untelevised, Livon Navarro versus Brightus Prescott, 10 rounds welterweights. Do you care, Rafe?
No, sir.
All right. Do you care about Deep on that undercard? You ready for Deep? All right. There's a Ray Austin heavyweight fight on deep on the
undercard. I am ready for deep.
Remember Ray Austin, the guy that Klitschko beat with left hooks in that title defense? He's deep on the undercard in a 6-round fight, but Oliver McCall, who's in his 50s, will take on Elisa Castillo, who's in his late 40s, 8-round heavyweight bout.
Oh man, I feel so dirty right now. Good Lord. I mean, I care, but in like a way that I'm just curious and I feel bad about myself and the world. I'm going to need to like do some community, like seriously 200 hours of community service after that fight. God.
All right. Well, Friday sucks for boxing, but Saturday is really damn good, Rafe. And I'll tell you where it starts. Are you ready? Let's do this thing. Saturday from Tucson, Arizona. It's an ESPN card, Rafe. Set your DVRs unless you're going to watch it live. The title fight in the main event is a rematch. Miguel Perchelt defends his WBC junior lightweight title against Francisco Vargas. Bandido is back, Rafe. This first fight was fun as crap and Perchelt won it. Now we're going to do it a second time, Rafe. You got to expect a war.
I care. I like this fight a lot. I am more of the, I'm one who is more of the opinion that Francisco Vargas had the toll of those wars he was in with, that
Takashi Miura one, and Orlando.
Yes.
Salido.
Thank you. Takashi Miura. And then the Salido fight, those wars. I don't think he's the same fighter. Now, he took the time off and he sent Rod Salka to hell while Rod Salka was wearing the Build the Wall shorts, and that was great. Uh-huh. But
that gave us this moment, Rafe. No, wrong one. You know what that gave us. That gave us this.
So he shot his load, and now he's getting pummeled.
You're getting pummeled after he shot his load. Hopkins is the best. By the way, I loved in your interview with Bernard Hopkins hearing that that's happening this weekend too. He's getting an honorary doctorate from Temple University.
Shout out to B-Hop.
Even on a strong boxing day on Saturday, that's my favorite boxing story of the week. B-Hop getting the doctorate from Temple University. I hope John Chaney is there to give it to him. That would just be magic.
Remember when John Chaney tried to kill John Calipari that time?
That was, another fantastic moment in Atlantic 10 history. Yes, sir.
Yes. So, Rafe, this Perchelt Vargas fight's going to be magic, all right?
I think Perchelt's going to blow him out. He beat him convincingly.
You think Bandido's washed.
He's going to blow him out. I think it's going to be like the Roman fight.
I hope not. All right. We care a lot about this co-main event. Emmanuel Navarrete rematch for the WBO junior featherweight title against What a Night for Ghana Boxing. Hello, Grandpa. Isaac Dogbe. Rafe, Isaac Dogbe took a beating in this fight that really hurt his momentum, where he told us on this podcast, what did he say? He planned on winning titles in the next 6 weight classes above him and becoming the next
pay-per-view. I'd have to pump the brakes on that.
We still love him, but Rafe, this is a tough test, man, because Navarrete's taller. He's got a stiff-ass jab. How does Dogbe do it, and can he do it, Rafe?
Everything we saw in that first fight, even though Dogbe said that he didn't train as well as he should have or just didn't have the right kind of camp, whatever the excuses are, even if all that is true and he comes in the best version of himself, this just looks like a nightmare style matchup for Dogbe, who's not a super polished fighter. When he beat Magdaleno, he was getting outboxed at times. It was just that he was tenacious and athletic and strong in a way that Magdaleno couldn't keep up with. Navarrete has a stick, that jab, that length. He throws really good check hooks that he almost couldn't miss Dogbe with the first time they fought. It was an ugly loss for Dogbe. And this is like a borderline, this is like a runner-up ball sack of the year type fight for Dogbe to jump right back into. I'm afraid it's not going to work out. I have to favor the Navarrete.
Inside that big scrotum is huge, huge testicles. He's got real big balls.
Rafe, what's
real, real big balls.
Shout out to T-Street. What's better, the scrotum or the testicles in that one, Rafe?
I'm a scrotum guy myself.
Possibly shot his load and.
Oh God! All right. Errol Spence by murder. This is a big gift for people. This ESPN card. I'm really looking forward. I don't even have a prediction. I just want to see if Dogbe can do it. This is going to be fun. I care about this Fox card. Fairfax, Virginia, which apparently is like Dan Rayfield's town. He said he has like a 2-minute commute to this. So hey, shout out to Dan Rayfield. Rafe, are you going to care about this? Because I do. Watch the face to face episode, PBC. It's out there. Jarrett Hurd defending his IBF and WBA junior middleweight titles against Julian J. Rock Williams. Rafe, I've had extensive time sitting down with both guys. They're both hungry. This could be fun, Rafe. Julian Williams, a better boxer, I think, than people realize. He was winning on the cards against Charlo before he got sent to hell with that uppercut. He's a tough fighter. I think he can really push Hurd, but I can't get a feeling that he can either outbox or outlast Hurd. And that's the, what you're facing at 154 against a junior middleweight like Swift, who's that big, who just wears your backbone down, Rafe.
Yeah, I think J-Rock, until he proves otherwise in a big fight like this, people are going to, I think, fairly question his chin, his durability, whether or not he can get through 12 rounds against another dangerous, big-punching, light middleweight. And Jared Hurd is definitely that. You know, he's going to put all that pressure on him. He's going to put all that body on him. He's going to throw a ton of punches. And I'm sure J-Rock will look good for moments of this fight, but I have to expect Jared Hurd to wear him down and eventually get a late stoppage.
It's crazy that I have, when I talked to Hurd, he said that he lost an amateur fight early on in which he gassed out after dominating a guy. Kind of, you know.
Yeah, we know what he did. He shot someone.
That he vowed from that day forward to never gas out in a fight, and that's why he's built this insane stamina. But yet to have a body that big that you're like, how the heck does he make this division, and yet at the same time have insane stamina? He's a real athlete, Rafe. He's a beast, man. You know, he still lives at home.
You mentioned that. He's an interesting guy. The more I learn about him, the more I hear about him, more I look at his, he's got a great Instagram account. He's doing like crazy ass gymnastics, tumbling that no man that big and powerful should be able to do. I like him a lot. I want to see more of him.
Yeah, no.
I want the whole Hurd.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Brian.
Yeah?
Let me ask you real quick.
Hold on, 1 second.
You know, I'm tired of getting the taste of him. I want the whole load.
Thank you.
The whole Hurd. Yeah. I'm tired of the taste of him. I want the whole Hurd.
Let's look at the entire man.
All right, tell me about this man, Rafe.
No, I was – shoot, now I can't even remember what I had this great idea I was going to ask you. Now I got Dwyer in my head.
Did it involve
– but let's turn back the clock a little bit. Let's revisit the undercard of – it was Triple G Canelo 2, right, when Hurd fought that Backstreet Boy and blew him out? No, that was Munguia. He fought a Backstreet Boy on the undercard of Fury and Wilder.
Yes, so I talked to him about that.
And didn't look good.
Well, here's what I talked to him about that fight. He was coming off of shoulder surgery. He knew the guy didn't have any power. He was going to try some stuff for the first 3 or 4 rounds. And the other guy kept going for it. He kept putting together combinations and going for it. And at first it was just annoying him and he was getting frustrated because he was trying to try stuff with like different hooks and setups on his jab. And finally, I think it was Jason Wellborn was the guy's name. You remember that from ringside. Finally, he put it on Hurd, and Hurd was like, Hurd told me like, you know, yeah, he hurt me for like a split second. Like, he got my attention. And then the next round, Hurd came out and demolished him. So it wasn't that he was rusty. He was effing around trying to get a triple-double, basically. Like, remember when Donald Royal tried to get that triple-double by, like, missing a shot on purpose? And then, who was the coach? Doug Collins walked the rest of the Pistons off the floor. Remember that? For the Magic?
You don't do that. Ricky Davis tried that one, too.
Yeah. You know where I'm going with that. Maybe I'm thinking Doug Collins is Ricky Davis and, I don't know. Maybe it's your bull.
It's got to be your bull, Brian. But I'll buy that excuse. I'll buy that excuse for Hurd. I will say that I don't think he can afford to fight like that against Julian Williams, though.
Hell
so
no.
Let's hope that he was telling the truth, because he needs to come out and be the Jarrett Swift Hurd that takes souls, that takes men's whole souls.
Yeah, let me analyze the tip. The co-main event, I don't really care about. Tell me if you do. Mario Barrios versus Juan Jose Velasco, 10 rounds, junior welterweights.
No.
All right, Matvei Korobov is back, the middleweight, against Emmanuel Alim, 10 rounds.
I don't care about this fight. After Korobov wins, I want to see him in another good middleweight fight.
All right, pushed down pretty deep on this undercard is a guy that you and I both care about, the Egyptian magician himself, Ahmed Elbialy, taking on Jaime Solario, 8 or 10 rounds, your choice, light heavyweights.
Man, I don't care. John, when you get exposed by late career
stop
Jean Pascal,
it.
I got to stop caring. I'm
stop
sorry.
It. That's our guy, Elbialy. Good dude, man. We're Facebook friends. He's a good dude, all right? Rafe, I think that's it. Oh, Saturday in Magdeburg, Germany, Robin Krasniqi takes on Stefan Hartel for Krasniqi's European super middleweight title. You care?
Hell no.
Monday from Tokyo, Maruti Mathlane versus Masayuki Kuroda for Methlane's IBF flyweight title.
Yeah, I know people are into that kind of stuff. I'll wait and see. If it's a good fight, I'll catch it on the YouTubes.
All right, next Wednesday in Sydney, Australia, Tim Zhu, son of Kostya Zhu, against Joel Camilleri, 10 rounds junior middleweights.
Tim Zhu is calling out Jeff Horn, right? I want to see him win. I want to see them make that all-Australia Duco dream fight.
Jeff Horn. Who's Jeff Horn? Nobody. I got so many different disrespectful things that I can say right now. I don't even want to do it because that was back then. Doesn't even matter now. But Amir Khan can beat Jeff Horn.
Oh, you come on. Saying?
I don't even know if Terrence Crawford can beat Amir Khan. Amir Khan is a better fighter than a lot of his competition lately. So I know there's a lot of people. I respect Terrence Bud Crawford. I just don't respect him at 147 yet.
You better. It's going to steal your soul, Keith. All right? Come on. All right, Rafe, that'll do it. I got nothing left. All right? That's the show for this week. Thank you, sir. I'm glad you're back from the Philippines. I hope to revisit some collaborations with you. Are you well? Everything's good in your life?
I'm with you, Brian, and it's great to be with you.
Anyway.
I think we're out.
Yeah.